This is the California Report podcast. I'm Lily Jamali.
And I'm Tiffany Kamhai. And we're going to start in the northern part of the state. Today marks 3 months since the campfire hit Butte County. It would take 85 lives and left behind a path of destruction unlike any wildfire our state has ever experienced. Now, housing the survivors is still a crisis months later. KQED's Polly Stryker has the latest on FEMA's progress.
Approximately 14,000 homes were lost to the campfire back in November of last year. FEMA spokesman Ken Higginbotham says around 200 FEMA trailers have people living in them now. He says FEMA's there to help.
We continue to work with eligible survivors to see what the best housing solutions are for each family.
FEMA says it's working off an estimate that around 1,300 people need housing. The agency has found more than 300 spots with hookups for trailers and mobile homes at sites in eight counties: Butte, Glen, Mendocino, Sacramento, Shasta, Sutter, Tehama, and Yuba counties. Higginbotham says the larger mobile homes are still being prepared for people to live in them. For the California Report, I'm Polly Stryker.
The city of Chico, just down the road from Paradise, has absorbed many of the people who lost it all 3 months ago today. Earlier, I spoke with Chico Mayor Randall Stone for his reaction to those numbers you just heard, that there are just 200 FEMA trailers in place for a disaster that destroyed 14,000 homes.
Well, I concur with those numbers. There's a significant impact to our community. I mean, we're looking at, you can see that there are thousands, maybe perhaps tens of thousands, and we believe that number to be closer to about 20,000 people are displaced and within the city of Chico alone. There are 80,000 people that were evacuated, and many of those people have returned. But we're also bracing for a re-evacuation of the town of Paradise. They're not able to scrape the debris and waste debris from the site while people are living there. So we're bracing for a re-evacuation of Paradise and the reabsorption of those residents attempting to stay on fifth wheels near their property.
And just for context, you're referring to Paradise in Butte County reversing course on allowing people to live on their property during debris removal. Now they cannot. In addition to the housing issue, what are some of the other impacts you're dealing with 3 months later?
Right. When you have a devastation of a community that's about 20 or 30%, the rest of the community has the ability to absorb the impact a little bit more readily. When you have devastation at 85, 90%, like Paradise was in this incident, strange things develop, and you really have a crisis of real estate. Businesses that were in the town that were destroyed are looking for any place that they can hang up the shingle and continue business. Schools that are cleared out of Paradise need real estate, and they return to churches. And that's typically where we've had our emergency shelters for inclement weather during the winter. So they're being driven out of the churches, being driven out of industrial buildings. And the tertiary impacts to those that are displaced, people that are displaced from Paradise that maybe had a rental in Chico are evicting, of course, the renters in Chico for no cause of their own other than they need the space and this is their home. So then you have a whole new set of people that were not burned out, that don't have insurance because there was no cataclysmic impact, and they need to find a place to live. So the trickle-down is really, really devastating.
And there is also impact on, you know, a big increase in traffic. Big increase in traffic collisions, right?
Right, about 72% increase in traffic congestion and 36% increase in the number of accidents. And that was just in the first month. So the ask that we have from the state of California is $12 million for traffic mitigation systems. It doesn't even put a single stitch of new pavement, and that's okay. You can't pave your way out of traffic congestion, so the best way that we can do is to re-engineer and reimagine our traffic system more efficiently. And thankfully, we weren't all that efficient to start with, so there's a lot of opportunity there. And that's the story of our lives. We're just seeking out opportunities wherever they are.
Immigration and Customs Enforcement detainees at a jail north of Sacramento are planning a hunger strike to protest longstanding problems like inadequate medical care. This comes after recent hunger strikes at ICE facilities in San Diego and El Paso, Texas, where some striking migrants are being force-fed. KQED's Farida Javala Romero reports.
About 50 people in ICE detention at the Yuba County Jail will start refusing meals this Sunday, says Carlos Sauceda, who's been locked up there for 15 months. In a phone call from jail, he says it takes too long to see a doctor or nurse.
The people that's here, I've seen them with pains, and it takes days for them to actually receive any care.
Detainees also want more exercise time and educational programs. Sauceda says they're on 19-hour lockdowns. Even when they're allowed out of their cells, there's not much to do, he says.
That leaves everybody simply staring at the wall, which creates a lot of tension because there's no way for us to cope with our stress.
Last week, a federal judge in Sacramento ordered the jail to fix these issues. But immigrant advocates say detainees doubt the jail will comply this time. Officials with the Yuba County Sheriff's Office did not immediately respond to requests for comment. An ICE spokesman says the agency is committed to providing safe and humane detention. For the California Report, I'm Farida Javala Romero.
Well, when it comes to overtime pay for farm workers, California has some of the strongest rules in the country. Now, our state could serve as a model for the rest of the nation. Yesterday, Senator Kamala Harris reintroduced a bill that would set the same overtime pay for farm workers nationwide. KVPR's Laura Sutsui has more.
Under federal law, farm workers have always been exempt from overtime pay. Teresa Romero, president of the United Farm Workers of America, says the Fairness for Farm Workers Act proposed by Harris would give these laborers the pay, she says, they deserve.
In many states, farm workers do not have the right to organize, but at least they have the opportunity to have overtime.
Doug Busselman is the vice president of the Nevada Farm Bureau, a neighboring state that doesn't require employers to pay farm workers overtime.
I think it's something that we probably would like to see handled at a state-by-state basis and not have it be a national requirement above and beyond what already is in the current law.
Current federal law doesn't mandate overtime pay for these workers. Harris introduced a version of this bill last year, but it didn't advance. The new bill mirrors California's law, which phases in overtime pay for farm workers over a period of 4 years. For the California Report, I'm Laura Sutsui in Fresno.
Now let's turn to our ongoing coverage of homelessness. In order to help homeless students, schools have to know they exist. But thousands of schools in California haven't identified a single unhoused student. Now, lawmakers are crying foul. KQED's education reporter Vanessa Roncagno explains.
Cheryl Kameny is a homeless liaison for a Salinas school district. That means it's her job to keep tabs on homeless kids. And she's helped identify over 3,000 of them. She's got some thoughts on what's keeping other homeless liaisons from doing such a good job around the state.
If you don't have the staff that helps with the investigation part of really finding out, is this family homeless or not? Do they need transportation? Can we help get them in a shelter? Do they need school supplies? I would see that being a definite barrier.
This week, State Assembly members David Chu of San Francisco and Luz Rivas, who represents the LA area, called for an audit of local school districts to find out why homeless students aren't getting counted. Kameny says the push could spur other districts to seek out ways to better serve homeless students.
The knowledge is there. The how-to and the tools are already there. I think it's just a matter of sharing them across the board.
If the audit gets the okay, it'll probably begin in March, says a representative from Chu's office, and results could come within a year. For the California Report, I'm Vanessa Rancagno.
And before we go this morning, we want to let you guys all know that John Sepulvedo has moved on. We are super grateful for John's dogged reporting and his knack for putting both heart and humor into each story he shared on our airwaves every day. John, we wish you the best of luck.
And I just want to say that John has impeccable taste in music, and he introduced me to this band. They're called Granddaddy, and they're from the Central Valley town of Modesto. Thanks for introducing me, John.
And that is the California Report for Friday, February 8th, a production of KQED Public Radio.
Our engineers are Danny Bringer and Katie McMurrin, with additional engineering from Jim Bennett, Chris Hoff, and Seal Muller.
Vinny Tong is our managing editor. Ethan Lindsay is our executive editor of news. And our chief content officer is Holly Kernan. I'm Lily Jamali.
And I'm Tiffany Kamhai. Have a great weekend.
Come down, we'll go to town. Support for the California Report comes from the California Healthcare Foundation, featuring Listening to Mothers in California, a new survey that reveals what is and isn't working with maternity care in the Golden State, on the web at chcf.org. And Eric and Wendy Schmidt, whose Fund for Strategic Innovation supports transformative ideas that benefit humanity while protecting the natural world, recognizing through science the interdependence of all living systems.